This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Hey-o! It's Pat Boyle, and today on the Best of the DA Show, it's a momentous Monday. Who won the weekend for DA? Speaking of winning the weekend, we go through the mania that was week two in the NFL. And we start with, how did the Packers collapse against the Atlanta Falcons? Plus, your best audio of the day and sound check, including the GOAT, Ian Eagle, dropping a Taylor Swift lyric for a Travis Kelce touchdown because, of course, Ian Eagle did it because he's the GOAT. Also, Bogus is stunned to a news over a missing F-35 jet, whatever you would call it, I guess. DA thinks it's aliens. Pretty good conversation around that as well. And then your advanced analytics, your epic fail, all the regular accoutrements of the DA show. You get them here. You get them now. It's the best of the DA show. What are you waiting for? It's now.
Where we start when it comes to the NFL is the Packers and Falcons. As Jordan Love entered the season looking to answer questions after being drafted to replace Aaron Rodgers, now it was his team, his moment. Rodgers gone. And of course, Rodgers gone for the Jets as well. And Jordan Love performed pretty well yesterday. And I think he answered some questions in Atlanta. But at the end of the day, it was the Falcons with a comeback victory to overcome the fourth quarter deficit and beat the Pack 25-24 to go to 2-0 on the season. And so how did the Packers blow that lead to the Falcons yesterday? It is where we begin, your cold open.
Love under center. He spins, fakes the handoff, looks to throw, swings right side.
Got him.
He's got Reed into the end zone of the pylon. Touchdown. Third touchdown pass of the day for Jordan Love.
You see the Atlanta Falcons out there will never be down for the count. We're going to fight until that clock hits zero. So, you know, that's what I'm proud of this team and everyone on this team for not giving up, and just keep going out there and just fighting until that clock hits zero.
Robinson with Ritter in the backfield. Here's Desmond keeping it left side. He will turn the corner and dive for the touchdown. He faked it to Robinson, and everybody with a yellow hat followed Bijan.
I think it just comes down to execution and being better in the fourth quarter and being able to, play a full game. And I think we didn't execute well enough in the fourth quarter. Weren't able to move the ball and convert third down, so that's really what hurt us.
Desmond to the line, going to pitch it to Bijan. He will cut it back. He's got the first down to the 16. My goodness.
Don't play complimentary football. And then when you have mistakes, all those get magnified. And so disappointed. You got to give credit to Atlanta. They battled and did a better job than us, obviously.
Young way for the lead. Snap, spot. Kick is up, and it is perfect. And Atlanta's in front with 57 seconds left.
This was nothing but a team win. No individual took part in this. You know, this was everybody that took part in what we just did today.
I don't believe it!
The most amazing, sensational, dramatic,
it's DA's top story.
Here he goes.
It's your cold open.
All right, your credits there. Wayne Larrabee on Packers radio. Wes Durham on Falcons radio. You heard from the two quarterbacks, Desmond Ridder and Jordan Love, as well as Packers head coach Matt LaFleur and rookie running back Bijan Robinson. At the end of the day, the takeaway here is that the Packers defense was the culprit yesterday in giving up the 24-12 lead. And Love was scattershot in the fourth quarter. And the Packers' offense did not score in the final frame as well. And so that's going to hurt you, obviously. But the Packers had the 24-12 lead going into the fourth quarter. And the Falcons scored every point after that, shutting out the Pack 13-0 in the fourth. And I give Ritter credit, Arthur Smith credit, the Falcons' offense credit, Bijan Robinson credit. But that's a Packers defense that needs to come up with a couple of big stops, big plays to help support its young quarterback early in his development. And I will tell you this from a Green Bay standpoint. Despite the loss, I am now officially a Jordan Love believer. What I saw from Love in the first 2 weeks is a comfort within the offense and taking the plays that are there. It's very un-Josh Allen-like as a young QB, and really now as a veteran QB as well, where we've seen all too often him try to do too much. Love is not doing that. Love is not putting the Packers in bad situations with bad decisions. He's reading what the offense is supposed to give you, taking that, being patient, moving the chain, scoring points. I compare that to Zach Wilson, who we saw yesterday against the Cowboys. And Zach Wilson, now in year number 3, is still struggling with just taking or making the read that's supposed to be there. And that is why, and we'll get into the Jets more and the quarterback situation for New York more later on in the show, but that is why the Jets have to move on from Zach Wilson if they want a shot of the playoffs this year. Because you can't be in year 3 and still not understand within the offense what it's supposed to be, what it's supposed to look like. Love is, Love does. But it was the Packers defense that allowed the Falcons to go on those clock-eating drives, to go down the field. In that fourth quarter, the Falcons had an 8-play, 75-yard drive and a 12-play, 66-yard drive to ice the game. 12 plays when you got to get the football back for your offense is unacceptable. And I thought that yesterday for the Pack, with all of the injuries on offense, Bakhtiari, Christian Watson, Jones, that was really going to stymie the offense. Instead, Love performed pretty well without those guys. Lost another member on the offensive line during the game. But the Pack defense just could not get the stop, and they've got to look at themselves in the mirror because the Packers should be 2-0 today with a young quarterback getting his first starts and instead have to come off of that one. Hey, the Falcons want to run the football, and they're able to run the football, and give them credit there. Yesterday against the Pack, they ran for more than 200 yards. Bijan had 124. They ran for 211. Ritter had another 39 on the ground. I think it's going to be a while before I really believe that you can win much with Desmond Ritter. But yesterday, slippery enough to make some big plays, and down the stretch, had some big completions and used his legs as well. And the Falcons are 2-0. And the most bizarre thing in this NFL so far may be the NFC South, where 3 NFC South teams are 2-0. How bizarre that the Falcons and the Buccaneers are right now 2-0. And going into tonight, we've got another one coming up here with the NFC South. I should say 2 of the 4 teams are 2-0 as the Saints are undefeated at 1-0, and they'll take on the Panthers tonight on Monday Night Football. All right, that's the recap on the Packers and the Falcons yesterday. A fun game. There was a lot of fun games. Last night in Foxborough, the Miami Dolphins go to New England and get another win. And this is just what they do. And it's kind of crazy, but how dramatically things have flipped in the AFC East, where unless Aaron Rodgers, you know, didn't go down, you were looking at an AFC East where the Patriots were by far the least talented team in the division. By far. And last night, I think we saw that again. Bill keeps trying to put duct tape and a stick of matches and some bubble gum around this thing like he's MacGyver, and he used to be MacGyver. But MacGyver's far more effective when Tom Brady's on your mission with you. And that roster, again, looks like an old Patriots roster, but without the quarterback. And I'm not saying Mac Jones is terrible, but he's not Brady, obviously. And last night against the Dolphins, it just took too long for the Patriots offense to create anything. And when they finally did, it had to be junk plays that they kind of pulled out of thin air. And at the end of the game, when they need a tight end lateral to an offensive lineman for a fourth down conversion to keep the game going, again, you're relying on junk plays. Brady used to be relying on chunk plays. Now they're relying on junk plays. And the Miami Dolphins are 2-0. And the Dolphins' offense wasn't great last night, but was enough. And they can run the football, and they can throw the football. And again, the first name of Tagovailoa is if Tua can stay healthy. But so far, so good. Tua was efficient last night, 21 of 30 for 250 yards and a touchdown and an INT. But the Dolphins could run the football. Raheem Mostert had buck 21 and had that 43-yarder to the house that pretty much put the game on ice. Miami doesn't worry about playing in New England anymore. They used to. It used to be a house of horrors for everybody, but not anymore. And Tagovailoa is now 5-0 against Bill. The Dolphins don't lose against the Patriots when Tua is healthy. So think about how much things have flipped, where something like last night was indicative of not the Patriots, who the Patriots are playing, have all of the talent, kind of come in as the aggressor. They've won X number of games in a row. They're the bullies in the relationship, the opponent of the Patriots. And the Patriots have to kind of like rinky-dink things up and try to kind of hold on for dear life and then mount a comeback at the end, which is what happened last week against the Eagles. It was kind of the same thing. The Eagles played the Patriots, and what happened? Eagles more talented, Eagles more dynamic quarterback, Eagles put points up early, and then the Patriots just took a long time to get going and had to kind of put on the comeback late to make it close. It's exactly what happened yesterday, last night. Dolphins more talented, Dolphins the better team, Dolphins offense clicks early, and then the Patriots have to go into comeback fashion. Patriots haven't been 0-2 in 22 years. And that was the 0-1 season where Bledsoe gets injured by Mo Lewis and Brady takes over. The difference is that 0-1 Patriots team could go to a Super Bowl because, well, they fell into the greatest quarterback of all time, but also because the defense was really strong, had drafted really well under Bill Parcells a couple of years earlier, the earlier administration, and all those guys were coming into their own. The Brewskis, the Seymours, the Vrabels, the Johnsons, all those guys, Ty Law, all those guys, Lawyer Malloy, had been there, and they were a great defense, and they could carry the day. This Patriots defense doesn't have that type of elite high-end talent. They're okay, but they're not that great. And so it's a different 0-2. And just in the division, the Dolphins look like a team that when you see some of the other contenders of the AFC, Chiefs haven't looked great for the first 2 weeks. They got the win yesterday, but the Bengals are 0-2. The Jaguars yesterday couldn't put any offense together. The Chargers are 0-2. I mean, there are good teams of the AFC. Bills put it together yesterday, but you look at the AFC and say, well, why can't the Dolphins dream? They can. They absolutely can.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number one. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.
Smiling like Little Mo every morning. It's a momentous Monday.
Every day can be a better day despite the challenge. All you gotta do is leave it better than you found it. It's gonna get difficult to stand but hold your balance. I just say whatever cause there is no way you're round it.
I just think people should know that if you stay positive, everything will be fine. You just eat, drink, and breathe positive thoughts. That's all you gotta do, and everything will be good.
That's right, especially in the face of adversity, and Shaq Barrett said plenty of that. Last season, in week eight, he tore his Achilles, same injury that Aaron Rodgers is dealing with. So here's a linebacker who obviously is playing a very combative position, physical position, coming off a torn Achilles. So he had that to deal with. And then, about 4 months ago, in late April, Shaq Barrett's young daughter, his two-year-old daughter, Araya, ended up drowning in the family pool. And that's immeasurable grief. That is just something that knocked him and his wife and the family on their side, as you could imagine. And so he was trying to handle all of that this offseason, rehab from the Achilles, the drowning of his two-year-old daughter, and he just said he cried every day. He just said he could not handle it. He cried every single day. But he kind of fought his way through it and is now back for the Buccaneers. And late in this game, the Buccaneers held a slim three-point lead, 20-17, yesterday in Chicago. The Bears are backed up against their own goal line. They need a two-minute drill from Justin Field to go down the field and try to get a game-tying field goal. And here's what happened with 2 minutes to play.
Fields takes the snap out of the gun, looks upfield, throws the ball upfield. It is
intercepted.
It's intercepted. Picked off by Shaq Barrett at the one. He's in for a touchdown. Touchdown, Tampa Bay. That's the takeaway.
Gene Deckerhoff on Buccaneers Radio. Fields drops back to pass. There's a whole bunch of bodies in the middle of the field. Fields throws the pass there, and Shaq Barrett just steps in there and picks it off. And then there's a huge pile of bodies at the goal line, and his teammates kind of push him into the end zone for a pick six to seal the game. That was the first touchdown of Shaq Barrett's career. As he goes into the end zone, he ends up blowing a kiss to the sky to send his ray of sunshine, as he called his daughter, a message. I told her, I love you, I miss you, and I wish you were here. Barrett said he was wearing a heart-shaped necklace with her picture on it. Bowles and the rest of those guys in that locker room all said after the game how impressed they are with Shaq Barrett, the type of person that he is, the type of husband and dad he is, that he's just as strong as they come. And what he's been going through, they all knew, and to see that inspired them all. And so, man, just another reminder of the power of just trying to put one foot in front of the other, even when it feels like the walls are closing in or you just had some type of trauma or tragedy handed to you. It happens to all of us at some given point in time. And, you know, for Shaq Barrett, he stayed the course and remembered his daughter and did a wonderful thing on the football field and dedicated it to her and, you know, just trying to pick up the pieces. So a pretty inspirational moment yesterday, a pretty heartfelt moment yesterday with the Buccaneers and the Bears late in that game. Shaq Barrett with a momentous moment. Well, that game itself was interesting because it puts the Buccaneers at 2-0, and I thought they were going to be one of the worst teams in football, and that puts the Bears at 0-2, and some massive question marks about Justin Fields. And the question marks just begin with, why does it take so long for the Bears offense to ever get into any type of rhythm? And is Justin Fields ever going to be a quarterback that makes things happen for the entire game and is comfortable out there making things happen? I think it's obvious the type of physical attributes that Justin Fields has. But in terms of a feel for the offense, a feel for the game, it just consistently appears that he's out of sorts, uncomfortable, erratic, inconsistent. And this is a losing streak that dates back to the middle of last year for the Bears. And they just can't seem to figure it out. And I know it was a blindingly hot game yesterday down in Tampa, but the Bears just keep looking like the Bears, which is not a compliment.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Thanks so much for being with us. You can listen to us on your smart speaker. Tell your smart speaker to play CBS Sports Radio. Soundcheck is brought to you by Wesley Financial. Stuck at a timeshare? Want out? Contact Wesley Financial Group now and get a free timeshare exit information kit at wesleyfinancialgroup.com. We start with Josh Allen after last week's stinker against the Jets. The Bills offense came alive yesterday.
Honest to God, I didn't see any reaction. I didn't look at anything. I didn't turn on TVs. The thing is with this game, man, it gives you the lowest lows. It gives you the highest highs. But I love feeling how I felt last week. I really do. Because it makes the good feel that much better. You know, it forces us to be better. And I want to be the best I can be playing this game and being the best quarterback I can be for this Buffalo Bills. So I take the bad with the good. I understand it. And I'm just trying to let it fuel me and use it to my benefit.
Just for clarification, Josh Allen loved the feeling of throwing three interceptions and giving away a fumble last week in a loss. Bills fans do not echo that sentiment.
That is garbage. That's such a lie. That's like bogus saying, you know, I love when I have the dreams of my wife leaving me for another man. Because then when I have the dreams of us having afternoon delight, or when we actually do that, it makes it that much better.
I love having an absolutely terrible show where I get everything wrong. We don't get to break. I blow through reads. I love when nothing fires correctly. I love those shows. I really love those.
You're proud of that 1-7 pick record, aren't you?
Yeah. I kind of am in a weird way. But Josh Allen, he was really good yesterday. And that's the Josh Allen experience. And I think that's the Bills experience in general, where they're a talented team. He's a good quarterback. They'll beat a lot of bad teams, but they are going to have a few head-scratching moments. It's just who the Bills are. And the unfortunate thing is those head-scratching moments have happened in the playoffs the last couple of years. We were talking about Shaq Barrett last hour. He was the subject of Momentous Monday. Barrett's 2-year-old daughter drowned in the pool earlier in the spring, and so he's been playing with a heavy heart this season. He had a heart pendant with her picture in it that he was wearing during this game. And at the end of the game, inside the Bears, their own 5-yard line, he picks off a pass from Justin Fields and pushes it in for the pick six. And so here's Shaq Barrett in the first touchdown he's ever scored in his career.
That play took about 5-7 seconds just from me catching the ball, running 2 yards, and then being pushed into the end zone. It felt like I was like in that play, it was slow motion. I was standing up there being pushed for 5 seconds when it was hindsight, probably like 2-3 seconds. I don't even know if it was that long. But yeah, that was the most tiring play of the game for me.
And the game is not over at that point in time. It's a 3-point lead. For the Bucs, and the Bears are on their own, 5-yard line, 6-yard line, something like that. So they've got to go a ways, but it's still not over. There's over 2 minutes to play, and Justin Fields throws the football just into the line. I mean, that's the game, obviously, right there, but he threw it into just a mass of humanity in the middle of the field when you're throwing out of your own end zone. How'd you think that would end? Let's listen into Ian Eagle from the NFL on CBS as he is calling the Jaguars and Chiefs game yesterday. Now, note that throughout the week, there was some scuttlebutt that perhaps Travis Kelce was spending quality time, QT, with Taylor Swift.
Low snap. Mahomes moving pocket. Mahomes floats it up. Caught! Touchdown, Travis Kelce! Kelce finds a blank space for the score.
And that's a Tay-Tay reference. Blank space is, if you didn't know,
I folks, didn't.
That is a Taylor Swift hit.
You know, I missed that one, but I was there front and center for Ian going to break after Andre Sisco's interception going, Sisco, pregnant pause, dancing to the thong song as he went to break. I got that one loud and clear.
Just amazing. Yeah. Ian is the best.
He was on one yesterday.
He's the best that we have. He's the best at this. What that is, he's the best. And that is calling a game and giving you the action, giving you energy, giving you accuracy. He's not late on plays. He's not messing up names. He doesn't not know who's playing. He's always on point, on point, on point. He hits the right moment with the right energy. He doesn't scream. He just, like, has the oomph when he needed and is clever enough to work in things like that, but doesn't force them, just plants them. And it's the best. And it's just, you know, I think there's Ian, then there's everybody else. He's also a guy that jokes around with us on this show about the dopey things that we do. So he's not so highbrow that he can't roll around with the peons like us. He said that his username is Scurvius312 on, I think, the YouTube chat for the DA show. I mean, he's just amazing.
Hey, Doc.
Oh, he's in the Twitch chat?
No.
Well, he came on and I said, you don't have a Twitter handle. And so we were joking back and forth. And he says, I don't use my real name. I'm Scurvius. If you go to.
I think, am Scurvius.
I think he admitted recently. Scurvius. On a podcast with the Nets radio voice, Chris Carino, that he cries to the notebook, too. I mean, he's just all...
He's best.
Everything.
He's
and
everything.
I think it helps that he's also not cool. Like, at least for me, like, knowing him a little bit, like, he's a nerd. Like, you and I are nerds. He's not... On one hand, he shouldn't know how to make a Taylor Swift reference. But he does... And then he does it so well.
He's really
sharp.
He's just really, really, really sharp.
Mm-hmm. I'll never forget when
he also calls NFL and the NBA both brilliantly.
Like, correct.
I mean, just flawlessly in between.
I'll never forget. I think Megan Thee Stallion went to Texas State or something like that. And they were in the first four. It was the first round of the NCAA tournament. And he goes, they got to use their body, yaddy, 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 yaddy. I was like, that is unbelievable. That's a GOAT call.
He does college basketball, the NBA, NBA national and NBA regional local for the Nets, and does the tournament and does the NFL, and he does them all just killer. And he's just a good guy. Like, yes. He comes on when we ask. He's always present during the interviews, doesn't mail anything in. He's a really cool mentor. He listens to tapes. He's the best of what we got in the industry, and a Taylor Swift reference on a Travis Kelce touchdown yesterday is awesome.
Hashtag toast him.
Yes. He also said that on this show.
I think he also, did he double down on the Swift and say that Kelce shook off the knee injury?
Oh, that's a good one.
Because I didn't hear the Taylor Swift thing live, and when I read about it, I thought it said that he also tacked on the knee injury, that he shook it off.
That's fantastic.
And that one I would have gotten.
He probably had like six or seven Taylor Swift lines chalked up ready to go in case he needed them.
And is that where Noah and his daughter come in? You think they're like the cool idea factory? They're the ones giving him the lines and the context of where to put these things?
Yeah, probably keeping them current.
Okay.
Yeah. Finally, let's listen in on Fox as referee Alex Kemp is making an intentional grounding call. Geno Smith is upset and wants an explanation. Listen to the ref, Alex Kemp, tell Geno, hey, 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 I'm talking to America here.
Dan Campbell trying to emulate the Pete Carroll gum chewing. And now they're looking at
intentional grounding. Offense number 7. It's a 10-yard penalty. I'm talking to America here. Excuse me. It's a 10-yard penalty and a loss of down. I mean, second down.
That is the best line I've ever heard, Adam Official. We'll get to the penalty in a minute. He just told Geno Smith, I'm talking to America. Pete Carroll is livid.
Well, he wasn't pressured. It's, it shouldn't be grounding, right?
That's so good. Alex Kemp is in the middle of the call, and Geno's like, whoa. He goes, hey, I'm talking to America here. I got to explain this for the TV audience here, buddy. I beat it. Scram.
I usually hate referees putting themselves in the spotlight more than they should be, especially a little homage to our buddy Zach Gelb. He's been ripping the TV refs lately, which I enjoy. I hate these guys getting up here and basically telling us what we can already see. And they know what the call is coming, so it's not like they're ever going to be wrong. And they always side with the call that the refs make for the most part. But this is one particular instance where I did enjoy a referee taking the spotlight.
Yeah, talking to America here. Shut up.
Geno's, hey, the guy's making the call, and Geno's like, well, it's terrible, it's terrible. He goes, hey, I'm talking to America here.
You know what Geno Smith needed? A spoonful of shut up!
Just a dash.
Just a dash. A little dab will do you. A little dash. Shut up! That is your sound check.
The Giants have done it. They trailed 20-0 at the half, 28-7 early in the third quarter. It's their first comeback win of 21 or more points since 1949 against the Chicago Cardinals. The final score, the Giants 31 and Arizona 28.
Made some timely stops at the end of the game. You know, made a game-winning field goal. You know, played much better, coached much better in the second half. And, you know, you hope they don't, you know, all start out 20-0.
That was Giants Radio on the call. Stream the NFL on Westwood One for free, sponsored by AutoZone. All season long, you can listen to every Westwood One broadcast on the NFL Live on the NFL app by asking Alexa to open Westwood One Sports or on the Odyssey app. Get in the zone, AutoZone. AutoZone's free battery testing and charging available for free at your local AutoZone. Get in the zone, AutoZone. Restrictions apply. It's a great comeback by the Giants. Daniel Jones kind of turned on the afterburners in the second half. Found his receivers. His athleticism is obvious. When Jones is running with the football, he's dynamic. He's fluid. He's a really efficient, mobile QB. And the Giants got big possessions, turned them into sevens and not threes late. They did not turtle and die, and then got the game-winning field goal and held on to the win. So it's an inspiring comeback down 20-0 at the half to move to 1-1 and to kind of save the early part of the season. There is that, and that is going to be what is the lasting image and sense of this game, was that the Giants put on this wonderful comeback and Jones looked good, and Saquon Barkley extending out the ball for that touchdown is a great play by him. Their rookie, Jalin Hyatt, has a 58-yarder. He's the burner that they drafted. They need him. Darren Waller, that they signed in the offseason, had 76 yards and 6 catches. They need him. Isaiah Hodgins with a big touchdown. They need him. So it all kind of came together, and the Giants got a big victory. But I'm still imprisoned by the image of the first half, in which the Cardinals are trying to lose football games and you were poor enough to fall behind by 20 points. The Cardinals are bad enough to give up that lead, and yet you allowed them to put up 20 unanswered to start this game. And it had to have been half Giants fans in the building yesterday. It looked like it was sea of blue in Arizona. I don't know. I don't know. I know it's a thrilling win, and Giants fans such as Kevin Wall today waking up, and they're like, win is a win. That's a great comeback. Bogues, I'm watching the first half going, I can't shake this feeling of how the hell are they losing after losing 40 to nothing last week? How are they losing to the Cardinals and Josh Dobbs by 20 points?
And James Conner is just running through, over people. And to the Cardinals' credit, they give up a touchdown right after halftime of the Giants. You think, okay, here's the Giants' comeback. They go right back down the field again and score. And they go for two to get the math back in their favor.
Right. 28-7.
So it's 28-7. And I thought, okay, there was the Giants' one little flash in the pan. And then back they came. I can't explain six terrible quarters like that. They acted like as if they had won the Super Bowl last year, and they were just kind of resting on their laurels, little hangover, whatever. And something changed, but I can't. As cool as it was, it can't erase the first six quarters, and it can't erase specifically getting outclassed by the Cowboys to start the whole season. Like,
so
that's the thing that
one bothers
most.
You most. I think the first two quarters yesterday would bother me most.
No, because everybody can have a bad in a moment by itself. You can have a bad 30 minutes of football and then recover and win.
There's bad, but, and then there's horrible.
Yeah, but what starts it is the bigger concern of just how good are they in their division, let alone the conference. And so last Sunday night was a big reality check. The difference between them and the Cowboys right now.
Yeah.
So they were on pace. You know, we break it down by half, Bogues. They lost 40 to nothing across four quarters to the Cowboys. They were losing 20 to nothing across two quarters to the Cardinals. And you think the 40 nothing loss to the Cowboys is worse than the first two halves yesterday?
Yeah, because I can easily dismiss. I know they're connected, but I can in my head connect them and go, okay, they were bad for 30 minutes against Arizona, and then they won. That game doesn't apply to anything else. But getting shamed and having no reaction on opening night, at home, prime time, historic rival, current rival, having no response to that, just laying down, that bothers me still. They have not come close to erasing those four quarters yet.
I was ready to toss that game out the window. You know, rain, that they pick six, blocked field goal for a touchdown. Things just went south. And once you get down 20 points to a team like that, Dallas, you're not coming back. So I was ready to throw that out the window as an outlier. And then they came out of the gate down 20-0 to Arizona. And it's, okay, maybe it was an outlier. Maybe this team isn't that good. Maybe this is a big regression this year. And maybe the 9-7-1 record last year, winning all those one-score games, is now they're going to lose a lot more than they won last year.
So early yesterday, as you might imagine, Giants fans were quite down, including our fine fleshy friend who took to social media and taught us, after six quarters, the season's over.
Quick update.
This team sucks.
That was Mraz just saying the offense sucks. Here's more from Mraz's social.
I don't know what you could say. It might be over for Jones, Dable, Shane. It's the Arizona Cardinals. The Arizona Cardinals. There's not a football season to be had. They robbed us of a football season.
They've robbed us of a football season. It might be over.
Over.
For Jones, Dable, and Shane.
On the verge of tears.
Note that if it is over for Dable and Shane, Mraz would have to resign his position here within the
Yeah.
As abided by in a contract. It might be over for the entire regime.
Yeah.
If they lose to the Cardinals yesterday.
They've robbed us of a season, of a football season. They have robbed us of a football season. Definitive statements through six quarters that the Giants were done. Over. Doubt disappeared.
And then, after the comeback.
Wow. Never doubted them! Never doubted them! Right, Peyton? We're back!
And if you could only see the look on Mraz's face with the I'm back or we're back, it's bright red. He's screaming into the camera and it looks like he's going to have an aneurysm. It is really, really very violent, the we're back.
Into his three-year-old, four-year-old daughter's face?
Three max. She's the youngest. Peyton's the younger one.
Yeah. No, I think she's more like two. Yeah. Because she was born when we went to Boise. So that was 2 years ago.
Right. Yeah. Right. She's about to turn two somewhere in here. Remember, she wasn't born on time.
Yeah.
So she was born after we came back. Sean could have made the trip, but he stayed away from it. Be careful.
Imagine in one, let's just say it's a 90-minute block of time between halftime and the end of that game. Within 90 minutes going, it's over for Jones, Daboll, and Shane. They've robbed us of a football season. Two, we're back. We never doubted.
We're back!
Not even time. It's the space of three tweets. The first tweet is the there. They might have to go tweet. I believe there was another video as the comeback began. And then the next tweet is the yelling, we're back.
Kevin Wall is a big Giants fan. Are you first half Mraz or second half Mraz?
Oh, I was definitely first half Mraz. I couldn't believe what I was watching. I thought last week was a fluke because of the bad weather. We know how talented Dallas is. Once Saquon fumbled that ball, you knew the game was over. And then I felt, okay, we're going to bounce back against Arizona. No big deal. And it did feel like a must-win game because look at the schedule. You got to go to San Fran on Thursday. Seattle's a tough team on prime time. Then you got to go to Miami and then Buffalo. I mean, not looking good. And then all of a sudden, you just see an interception. Three and out. 20-0. It's just like, what the heck is going on? And thankfully, I was about to leave here. I was here yesterday afternoon. And I was saying goodbye to everyone. First play I see.
Including the football season.
Including the football season. That's true. First play, Hyatt. 58 yards. I'm like, okay, maybe I should stick around a little bit. And then I saw the touchdown, leave the control room, go back into the newsroom. Now it's 28-7. And then something told me go back into the control room.
Oh.
My superstition.
The inner YA tittle.
It just clicked on me. It dawned on me to go back in there because they scored a touchdown when I was in the control room. I did not leave that control room for the rest of the game.
Look, so Kevin Wall had a hand at the comeback yesterday.
Thank you, Kevin.
So today, are you optimistic or are you like, how the hell did we drop down by 20 points of this crappy team?
Don't get me wrong. It was exciting to come back. Obviously, it was tied for the biggest comeback in Giants history. But there is still a lot of concerns, though. Am I shouting, we're back? No. Because I'm not. Because look at the schedule. Miami... we see how they are. I mean, Wink Martindale gave up 60 points in six quarters. What do you think Tua's going to do to you? I'm going to Buffalo. I was actually thinking about canceling the trip to Buffalo in October. Sell my tickets. Sorry, my boy, Matt. I'm not going.
You can't cancel that trip.
Yeah, that's true. It's the final chance I'll see a traditional NFL stadium. But it's just like... What happened? We've gone through so much, and we bought the hook, line, and sinker with Daboll and Shane, and now what? Now we're taking for Caleb Williams.
Now they're 1-1. Bogus has our headlines.
Guys, 2001 was the last time the Patriots were 0-2. 22 years ago, D.A. was using an old cell phone as a pickup line at Syracuse bars.
Right.
I was trying to get Smush Parker into the NBA, and Boyle was too young to know about parlays or spreading seed.
Or was he?
I hope he was. And
what year?
2001?
Yeah, a little too early.
Okay, good. And now Bill Belichick's team is winless after two games again.
Not too much to say after that one.
Yeah, 24-17 home loss to the Dolphins on Sunday Night Football.
He's a great loser.
His Pats were down 17-3 early fourth quarter, but Miami let them hang around, including a missed field goal with over 2 minutes left. But then the Finns survived a lateral to an offensive lineman on fourth down. The stop got Mike McDaniel's team finally to 2-0.
On the road. Primetime division opponent. Those are very, very valuable games to be able to come up with the win. So I was happy for all the guys, really.
McDaniel got 121 yards and two scores on the ground.
He sprinted into the locker room.
Was that halftime or after the game?
Halftime.
Okay.
Is that because he didn't want to do an interview?
That's the way it's presented, that he was running away from the camera.
Oh, McDaniel?
Yeah.
No, he finished the headline. I think he's just a weirdo. Did I say that he finished the interview? I think he's just a weirdo, and he saw the cameraman like jogging with him to the locker room, so he just ran away from him.
Gotcha.
So 121-2 on the ground for Raheem Mostert. Tua and Tyreek Hill hooked up for a touchdown through the air. Fingers crossed, though, for Jalen Waddle, who left this game injured in the second half. Back to the Giants quickly. Saquon Barkley scored twice in their comeback, but added an ankle injury late in the win. He'll get an MRI today. Joe Burrow said his right calf acted up at a 27-24 loss to the Ravens, and Colts QB Anthony Richardson is in concussion protocol. Indy won in Houston 31-20. With Gardner Minshew playing more than half the game. I'm pretty sure I heard Terry Bradshaw call him Manchu during a highlight toss yesterday. Now, you guys know this better. You got to explain this one to me. Boyle's beloved Rams, they're down 10 to the Niners in the final seconds. They cannot win the game. All they can do is change the final score. Instead of throwing the ball into the end zone, maybe for a touchdown, Sean McVay orders a field goal. They hit it. They lose 30-23. And those 3 points cost a lot of people money.
Yeah.
Making no accusations here, I just don't know why you just settle for a field goal. There's no point differential. There's no reason to lose by less. Throw the ball in the end zone. See what happens. Take a knee. Why are we kicking field goals to lose by 7, not by 10?
You want to know why, Bogues?
McVay is a young guy. Does it have to do with the line?
I mean, it changed the line. A lot of people had Niners plus 7.5 or Rams plus whatever it was.
Rams plus 7.5.
And the three changed things.
Sean McVay knows, like the PB boys know, that good teams win, but great teams cover.
Okay.
He had to squeak through that back door any way you can, baby. You just got to get in that back door.
So, thanks. My question then is there a sneaky like memo from league headquarters to never do this again? I mean, they can't have a conversation like this, even in jest, happening the morning after a game when the coach inexplicably kicks a field goal that all it does is change betting outcomes.
I could be mistaken on this, and this is a million iterations of tiebreakers away, but is there a point scored tiebreaker in the NFL playoff?
I mean, there could theoretically be like the eighth or ninth way to break a tie for a wild card spot, but I mean, is that what he's thinking about in week two?
Unless it's experience or a rep for the field goal team?
I would say in all seriousness, maybe he thought there would be a second left on the clock if the field goal was good, and maybe that gives him a prayer of getting an onside kick and having 1 second to throw a Hail Mary to try to tie the game. That's my thought.
But I don't think he would have had enough, because the clock is ticking to zero, the ball going through. And even the guys on TV are like, what did we just see? And there's no way he could have thought onside kick, recover with time left for
play. Let's ask this question, though. If you have only one play left in the game and you're down by 10, why is it more valuable to go for a touchdown that can't win the game versus kicking a field goal?
I'm for the just leave. Take a knee. Don't hurt anybody.
Just wrap up.
Right. Just get out of there safe. I'm not going to win. Let me make sure that, God forbid, somebody runs into Matthew Stafford. God forbid, Puka Nacua tears an ACL.
But we know
you're kicking a field goal. For a jump ball.
You're kicking a field goal.
That's frowned upon. That's frowned upon. If you're down and you have the ball to take a knee, that's frowned upon.
Well, isn't it more frowned upon to score meaningless points? Like, I thought as he was getting to Shanahan, I thought Kyle was going to say something like, what are you doing?
What would you want him to do?
Just nothing.
You want him to take a knee down 10.
I want him to run a play and throw the ball into the end zone.
I think maybe
that's how you get somebody hurt.
Yeah, maybe that's the concern, that McVay's like, it's a meaningless play, so we're not going to let Stafford take a shot here, you know, from an oncoming pass rusher or something like that.
So, you know what? Here's the tiebreaker number 10.
Okay, so
in a two-way divisional tie, tiebreaker number 9 is most net points against shared opponents. Tiebreaker number 10 is most net points in all games. Yeah. 11 is most net touchdowns in all games.
It must be, we don't want to take a knee because that's a loser move. If we're losing, we have the ball. But we don't want to give Matthew Stafford a chance to get hit on a meaningless play. So let's just kick a field goal. Everybody's going to go home. No one's going to get injured on the play.
Okay.
And we want to hit that backdoor cover.
There's that. Two chances to lose money in the NFL tonight. The Saints host the Panthers, 7:15 Eastern and 8:15 kickoff in Pittsburgh for the Steelers and Browns. Georgia and Michigan remain atop the AP College Football Top 25. Texas and FSU flip-flopping at third and fourth since the Noles barely beat BC, who almost lost to Holy Cross the weekend before. Alabama falls to number 13, ending the second longest top 10 streak ever at 128 weeks. Miami went 9 weeks longer between 85 and 93. The Arizona Diamondbacks know how to beat the Cubs.
Yeah, the first one here, and a high drive, deep right field, back of the warning track at the wall. She's gone! A two-run homer by Marte, and the Diamondbacks lead it 5-2. His 23rd of the year.
Greg Schulte on D-backs Radio. Arizona a 6-2 win on Sunday Night Baseball for a three-game sweep after taking 3 of 4 at Wrigley last weekend. Arizona is now in the second NL wildcard spot, a half game up on these Cubs and the Marlins. The Orioles and Rays are playoff bound courtesy of the Rangers' 9-2 loss in Cleveland. Baltimore beat Tampa Bay yesterday 5-4-11 to rebuild its AL East lead to 2 on those Rays. And now, boys, let's get stunned.
It doesn't take much to surprise this bouncing baby boy.
This is honestly the most stunned I have ever been on the show to a news.
The DA show is stunned to a news.
If you are in the Charleston, South Carolina area and you're free today, the U.S. Army needs your help. It has misplaced something. It's a rather big thing, so theoretically it should be easy to find. An F-35 fighter jet is MIA. The Army says the plane and its pilot had a, quote, mishap yesterday. The pilot safely ejected, went to the hospital to get checked out, but he's fine. And then the plane disappeared. They have the general area of where it last was on radar.
What?
Yeah, and it's, I guess it's near water, so maybe the thought is it crashed into a lake or something, and that's why no one can actually see it. But they don't know exactly where this bad boy is in the general Charleston area, and they're asking anybody who might have seen something, heard something, to let them know so they can go find it. If I live there, I might have taken today off to try to help a missing U.S. Army fighter jet.
This is insane. This is totally insane. The F-35 program is the most expensive U.S. weapons program ever. $400 billion in development and acquisition and $1.2 trillion to operate and maintain this fleet. They don't have a tracking device. They don't have a Find My iPhone on an F-35 that if the pilot ejects, we can't track this.
And if it's submerged in water, everything is unusable.
I mean, look.
Is that a ping coming from somewhere?
Rosie the cat has something on her collar where if she gets out of the house, we can find where she is.
You put a chip in the plane.
We don't have something on an F-35 that if the pilot ejects, we can't find it? That's insanity. My guess is a Tesla you can track no matter if there's somebody in it or not. You can put cinder block on top of the gas pedal, and wherever it drives, you'll be able to track.
My kid was a great adventurous with friends. I probably could have known exactly what ride she was on at any moment thanks to her phone.
Right. Why not just keep the pilot's phone inside the airplane so we know where it is? You can't ping that thing. It's got to have the most powerful computer system that any airplane. It's an F-35.
Yeah. Or how about this? Don't tell us it's missing. Go find it yourself on the sly. Pretend you knew where it was the whole time.
Guys, this is the best evidence yet that there's UFOs. Because an F-35 disappeared. Even if, as you said, it's submerged into a lake or the ocean, it's got to have a tracking device on it. It's a computer. It's a computer with wings and ammunition. You don't just lose that. Like, even if our cars were stolen out of off the street after we got off work today, eventually be tracked. I mean, you'd have to, like, disassemble it. Like, unless you dumped it into the bottom of the Hudson, and you still could. An F-35... there's no way you lose it unless it is taken by aliens and, like, it disappears.
So you think it just got sucked into a spaceship somewhere and taken away?
maybe they have some type of cloaking technology to where they can dismember the tracking of the F-35. It's got to be either a government, and the U.S. doesn't want to admit this, it's either going to be another government or an alien system that has higher intelligence technologically than we do. You don't just lose fighter jets.
The aliens are Harry Potter now. Give it, put the cloak of invisibility on it.
That's what somebody did. This is not a plane that you find like in a field somewhere.
DA does have a point.
Well, does he?
Think about satellite shots. They have geo-tracking on everything. Everything. And from a satellite shot, of course they can see, when did this get lost?
Yesterday.
So they got 24 hours of satellite shots. An F-35 doesn't just disappear.
So it is, this jet is used and spent so much money on because it has stealth capabilities. So maybe it's now backfiring that you can't find it on radar when it's flying. They can't find it on radar
it's crashed. My guess is the U.S. military makes sure when it spends trillions of dollars on its toys.
That they know how to find it on radar?
Yes, we can find it.
No one did that part.
We need Carlos with a K. I mean, what are we doing with the reserves? This is the time for Carlos with a K and the reserves to spring into action.
That's
find
right.
This F-35. You get off your ass and you find that F-35.
That's right. Hey, Carlos with a K, no more weekend board shifts for Chris Moore's show. You get your ass down to Charleston and everybody in the reserves just fan out and find this thing.
It's also remarkable as a lifelong New Yorker where there is literally no free space that a fighter jet can crash and no one noticed it. That in peace and quiet it can crash. Not one person's like, oh, you know, I saw it. I heard it. If that happened here, people on the ground would have died. Houses would have burned down. There would have been video of it.
No plume of smoke. No anything.
Lake Moultrie's Charleston, probably the most apparently remote place on the planet that a fighter jet can go down and nobody noticed.
That's
it.
That's what I'm saying, man. And this got taken by a foreign government or the aliens.
Invading U.S. airspace to what? Suck up a jet again?
Well, if an F-35 cuts loose over the Atlantic, maybe at some point, a foreign government that also has aircraft around the Atlantic goes, okay, that's ours now. We circle it, boys, and then we take it in, and somehow they guide it to wherever.
Or they do like the Dark Knight Rises with Bane, where they get an even bigger fighter jet, and they rip the wings off the thing and sink that bad boy, sink that puppy to the bottom of the ocean.
That's right. That's right.
Or aliens.
I'm going to go with
Harry
aliens.
Potter.
I like the aliens.
Cloak of invincibility. It has to be somebody that has equal or better technology than we do. And that's the height of our technology. And we usually don't get out technological. So I think it's aliens.
Life 360 works on a phone that's been missing for a week.
Believe me. If we lost Southwest 1726, it would be found within 5 minutes.
No, except there's that one plane that, like Malaysia, whatever, that no one can find still.
Well, but that was right. That
no idea. But that crashed theoretically, maybe kind of, in the open ocean, and there's no telling where it went.
Right?
Didn't they?
And they found like part of the. They found part of the.
They
the
found
wing.
Pieces yeah. of things, but never. They never found the plane.
Right, but they found pieces.
But Charleston compared to the Indian Ocean.
No, that's what I'm saying. You can lose a plane in the Indian Ocean. You can't lose a plane
exactly.
in Charleston. But
aliens.
It also does not leave. Okay, fine. I'll give you aliens. It's not another country beating us to our crash.
Are you an alien disbeliever in general, Bogues?
No, I believe aliens are real. I just don't think this is what they did.
Okay.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
Our poll question today, after a week of rah-rah, unkillable Jets fans wanted to remain optimistic. We still believe in Zach Wilson. After yesterday's 3-interception effort in the 30-10 loss, should Jets fans finally accept the season's over? 79% of you said, yes, they're toast. Only 21% believe the season is still not over yet. Data tells us on the look-ahead betting lines, the Jets are only favored in 6 games the rest of the season. I'm surprised it's that high. In his 23 career games played, Zach Wilson has a 56 completion percentage, 16 touchdowns to 19 interceptions, and a quarterback rating of a paltry 36. And perhaps the Jets should kick the tires on current Cardinals backup and future first ballot Hall of Famer Clayton Tune to solve their QB issues. Clayton Tune.
Clayton Tune.
Tune. Get tuned up. By the way, more data from the research department as we were talking about Giovanni Carmazzi from Hofstra, who was drafted in 2000 ahead of Tom Brady. Cap just sent me a little nugget. Carmazzi was living in Northern California as a farmer, yoga practitioner, and an owner of 5 goats. It was reported he did not own a television. My franchise QB right there.
How do you not have a TV?
You live for goats.
I'm Carmazzi, and I live for goats.
That's right. Monday Night Football Preview, sponsored by FanDuel Sportsbook. Make every moment more with FanDuel, official sportsbook partner of the NFL. Saints, 3-point favorites in Carolina. Total is at 39.5. AFC North, the Browns head to Pittsburgh. Cleveland ace light, 2-point favorite. Over-unders at 38 on that one. Guys, our epic fail is, remind me again?
The F-35 going missing.
Oh, the stunned to a news. There's an F-35 fighter jet that has gone completely missing. The U.S. military needs your help. Here's your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
The F-35 program is the most expensive U.S. weapons program ever. $400 billion in development and acquisition, and $1.2 trillion to operate and maintain this fleet. They don't have a tracking device. They don't have a Find My iPhone on an F-35.
Oh, I used to be great with mail.
That's insanity. My guess is a Tesla you can track no matter if there's somebody in it or not. You can put cinder block on top of the gas pedal, and wherever it drives, you'll be able to track.
And down the stretch they come.
This is the best evidence yet that there's UFOs. Because an F-35 disappeared?
So you think it just got sucked into a spaceship somewhere and taken away?
Maybe they have some type of cloaking technology to where they can dismember the tracking of the F-35.
The aliens are Harry Potter now. Put the cloak of invisibility on it.
That's what somebody did.
We need Carlos with a K. I mean, what are we doing with the reserves? This is the time for Carlos and a K and the reserves to spring into action.
That's
find
right.
This F-35. You get off your ass and you find that F-35.
That's right. Hey, Carlos with a K, no more weekend board shifts for Chris Moore's show. You get your ass down to Charleston, and everybody in the reserves just fan out and find this thing.
Wow. Or they do like the Dark Knight Rises with Bane, where they get an even bigger fighter jet, and they rip the wings off the thing and sink that bad boy, sink that puppy to the bottom of the ocean.
That's right.
Or aliens.
I'm going to go with aliens. Potter.
I like the aliens.
Cloak of invincibility. It has to be.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Dixieland Dan tweets, if you think losing a fighter jet is bad, the U.S. military has actually lost several nuclear warheads. Some of them have even been lost inside the U.S., notably 3 lost off the coast of the Carolinas. How the hell do you lose nukes? Yeah, not like your keys or your wallet. Aaron tweets, does the Wizard or perhaps the PB Boys have any thoughts on tonight's game? Hashtag, here we go, Brownies, here we go, woof, woof, woof. The Wizard has no lean. He's just licking his wounds after a 1-3, meaning that's a 1-7 start to the season. How do the PB Boys see tonight, Browns and Steelers?
The PB Boys have the Saints number closer to 3.5, 4. That's what they've handicapped it at. So they like that the fact that they're getting 3 on the road. You know, everybody thinks divisional game, week 2, prime time, you would take the home dog, but Bryce Young, I think, stinks. And against that Saints defense, which is historic for really throwing QBs off their game, I think he's in for a rough night. I think multiple turnovers, so I'm taking the Saints. Who dat on the road with the 3? And then I do like the home dog in the other one. I'm not sold off Cleveland being a great team because Burrow and the Bengals look so bad. Plus, I think Pittsburgh looked as bad as they will against the Niners. I think Kenny Pickett, that offense gets going. I don't think the Cleveland defense is that incredible. So I'm taking the Steelers at home.
Okay. Daniel in the 316 says, I hope Pete the Body doesn't ask Boyle to see pictures in his phone during that job interview.
Hey, now.
How would that go? So the last part of this interview, Pat, can we see your phone?
He'd make it all of 4 photos. I'd be gone.
All right. That puts the finishing touches on a Monday morning edition. Thanks to Pat Boyle, executive producer. Thanks to Kevin Wall on the Wheels of Steel. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA. And thanks to Andrew Bogish on your headlines. Tomorrow is a Trash Tuesday. Plus, we'll have both of the Monday Nighters to react to with things that we did not get, like the Lions and Seahawks, more on the Cowboys coming up tomorrow morning on the show. Be good. Be good to one another. We'll see you then. I'm DA. The Mothership Disconnects.
Hey everyone, Boomer Esiason here. The NFL Draft is behind us and your favorite team is now gearing up for week number 1. The free Odyssey app puts you right in the middle of the pro football conversation with the biggest sports radio stations from across the country. The local voices who know your team the best, giving you their unfiltered takes on the current state of your squad. It's always football season right here on the free Odyssey app.